they need. This is an achievement over here that will give encouragement to our allies and to our fighting men at battle stations all over the world. We could never have achieved this success without the untiring efforts and volunteer workers who've been the unsung heroes in this grand enterprise. Day in and day out, our list of which there are many thousands also contributed, not only to the speeding up of the production, but the success of the war-saving program and effort. My firm belief that the goodwill created by the payroll savings plan has been felt all along, felt for years to come. I like to feel that the new relationship between labor and management, which has been shown so magnificently in this war savings campaign, is helping to build the post-war world right here and now. I like to plan for the post-war years and management working for and their country's good. Even though the payroll savings plan is only one phase of millions of oil and businessmen, country's disposal, 50 million men and women during the past year. The war bonds are the people of American industry when the bonds mature. They represent new homes, new horizons. They will help to give body and soul freedom from want and in millions of Americans. To my mind, this is for the post-war years. Washington has said that more now have a direct finances of their government. Now, it means that their savings in helping to win the war to keep peacetime industry active and strong in the future years. Habits of thrift are growing steadily stronger with the results that will help both war and the people.
Linda Darnell, Bob Burns, Jane Froman, Igor Gorin,
To you millions who are listening here, this is for you and yours. Thousands who will listen to rebroadcast at Fighting Front, this full gratitude and with all our love. Here's Jane Froman with a message for Private Jones, United States Army, from the girl he left behind him here at home. It begins...
Dearly beloved, how clear I see. Somewhere in heaven you was fashioned for me. Angel eyes, you. Angel voices, let me through. Nothing could save me. They gave me a heart. I know that I'll be.
our message from home tonight, Hollywood contributes now its chief export, glamour. Our Western representative and official glamour gleaner, Robin Burns, has come up this evening with what may be conservatively termed a nice little item. Her name is Linda Darnell. She works for 20th Century, and you saw her most recently in The Loves of Edgar Allan Poe. Is everything under control, Bob?
The Marines have landed, Ronnie.
Then we may assume that the situation is well in hand. Proceed, Sergeant.
Okay, Sergeant Coleman. I just called Ronnie Sergeant to show you that I know something about his past. I bet you not many of you know that Ronnie was a member of the London Scottish Regiment during the last war. Well, he was. But I ain't going to stand here and reminisce about what Ronald Coleman did 24 years ago when Linda Darnell is standing here right beside me right now. You know, every time I look at Linda Darnell, I just think to myself how lucky I am. I mean it. Imagine me getting to talk to all these attractive, glamour girls. Honestly, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. I want to tell you, Linda, I could just stand here and feast my eyes on you.
Oh, well, thank you, Bob, but please don't feast your eyes too long.
Why not?
Well, the longer your eyes feast, the longer mine are on a diet.
Well, you shouldn't say those things like that to me, Linda. Honestly, I'm sensitive. You know, I ain't used to getting brushed off.
Oh, really? Well, you have no idea how much it would improve your appearance.
Well, that settles it, Linda. That settles it. Pretty as you are, I'm going to cross you right off my Christmas list.
Oh, Bob, I was only fooling. Was I really on the list of the people you were planning to give a gift to?
No, get one from.
Oh. Oh, gee, I wish you hadn't mentioned gifts, Bob. It's so hard to get the right things for men this year.
You have to do much shopping for men?
Shopping for men? Oh, no. I just walk along the boulevard and wait till they whistle.
Well, now about Christmas shopping, Linda. I know if you're planning to mail any gifts anywhere in the United States, you'll hurry.
Oh, definitely. I know how rushed the post office is.
And shorthanded, too. I want to tell you, even down home in Van Buren, the postmaster's so busy, why, he don't have time to read all the postcards. I want to tell you, though, there's a wonderful little town, Linda. I mean it. You know, one of the greatest men I ever heard of come from Van Buren.
Oh, really?
I'm not fooling. Back home, nobody ever realized how brilliant this man was when he was still a boy. So he left town and, well, it's the same old story of hometown boy makes good. You'd know his name in a minute if I mentioned it.
Is he attractive?
Well, that's just one of the reasons for his big success, I think. He's one of the handsomest things I ever laid my eyes on. I want to tell you. Well, of course, I don't have to tell you. He's in Southern California right now, and you may have seen him around town.
Mm-hmm.
Bert, Dave, Cook, Milton Berle, Max and Sullivan, and Paul. Pause now.
This is Ronald Coleman again in New York, bringing greetings and best wishes from home to the defenders of our homes on every front. This is from all of us to all of you. We're thinking of you, praying for your victory, and striving to be worthy of you. Now and after victory comes. And now, I wonder if you wouldn't like to hear Maxine Sullivan sing Loch Lomond again. The way she used to sing it before you went away, remember? Here is Maxine and Loch Lomond.
By yon bonny bay, and by yon bonny bay, where the sun shines bright on Loch Lomond, where me and my true love were ever wont to gay, on the bonny, bonny bay of Loch Lomond. Coleman. Or you'll take the high road and I'll take the low road. I'll be in Scotland for ya. Mark me and my true love, we'll never meet again on the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond. Was there that we parted in yon shady glen by the steep, steep side of Ben Lomond, where in purple hue the Highland hills be blue and the moon coming out in the gloaming? You'll take the high road and I'll take the low. I'll be in Scotland for ya, but me and my true love will never meet again on the bonny bay. On the bonny, bonny bank, on the bonny, bonny bank of Loch Lomond, Loch Lomond.
Over here this week, we were reading John Steinbeck's new book about the Army Air Force, Bombs Away. On Main Street, the movie houses are showing the new Crosby, Hope, Jones on The Road to Morocco. On Broadway, rehearsals began this week for the first wartime Ziegfeld Follies. For more news of home, and in the lightest possible vein, we give you the star of the new Follies, Milton Berle.
Fine. That was Citizen Korn and his orchestra. I'm very, very happy, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very, very much, Mr. Coleman, for your wonderful introduction. Thank you very, very much for presenting me in such a wonderful manner. Thank you. Do I sound like Douglas Fairbanks, Jr.? It's really a pleasure and a privilege, ladies and gentlemen, to be on this program tonight. I'm here on behalf of the Treasury Department, and I'd like to be half of the Treasury Department. Any blonde today? Oh, if you think I'm kidding, I'd rather have a blonde out and a black out than a creep out with a teeth out. Oh, give me one dozen donuts, put some jam in between them. You think that Gorin has a voice? Yeah. My voice isn't what it's cracked up to be. Just cracked, that's all. You've heard of the Merry Max? I'm Max. In order to be a great singer, one must suffer. You, not me. You may laugh, but I toured for a whole season. Don't walk out, Wallington, please. He don't like to hear me talk about myself. I toured for a whole season with Nelson Eddy. No kidding. I used to put raisins in his shortening bread. I'll never forget the first day I sang with Fred Waring's Glee Club. Yes, I'll never forget the first day. I'll never forget the last day. Same day. Sang with Fred Waring's Glee Club. Yes, I'll never forget the first day. I'll never forget the last day. Same day. You should have heard what the critics said about my voice. For example, Dean Taylor. Dean Taylor said that he deems it advisable I become a tailor. When When I sang... All kidding aside, when I sang in concerts, women threw money at my feet. They threw jewels at my feet. They threw their hearts at my feet. What have my feet got that I haven't got? I'll never forget the first time I sang The Flight of the Bumblebee. I pretended I was a bee. And I said, I sing. And I got... You beat me to it. Now, wait a minute. The guy in the balcony yelled, "You certainly do, brother. You certainly do." Just the other day, I was caught in a nylon stocking sale at Macy's. Now, I'm dreaming of a black and blue Christmas. You know, I'm really puzzled. I don't know what to get my wife for Christmas. She wants a man. But you're jealous, that's all you are. But I really have a surprise for her. I bought her the most beautiful solitaire ring. It's platinum rubies on one side, sapphires on the other, and in the middle, a gorgeous 14-carat coffee bean. Christmas shopping. That's an American phrase for buying something someplace for somebody who buys you the same thing for the same price. And then returns it. There's a joke there someplace, but this is no time to go on a scavenger hunt. By the way, I want to tell you... I must let you in on a little great secret. I just heard that the war will be over in 3 weeks. Well, my Uncle Dave was just drafted. Really? He's never held a job more than 3 weeks. Well, he'd never been drafted except for only one thing. They have a new way of examining you at the draft board now. They have two doctors. One looks in your mouth, the other looks in your ear. If they can't see each other, you're in. My whole family are really doing their bit. My brother Phil is in the Navy. He's in charge of the captain's bridge. Every night he puts him in a glass of water. Oh, my brother. No, he's a nice fella. He was always sea-minded. Every night he kept staring at the waves, until they pulled their shades down. I've been entertaining the soldiers and the sailors all over the country. I've been an entertainer all my life. Of course, I really don't have to do this for a living. My mother owns the champagne concession. I ruined the joke. Everybody dance. Goodbye. I was saying she's got the champagne concession at the Kaiser Shipyards. That's a joke. Thank you. Your name and address, please. I was invited up to the Kaiser Shipyards the other day for lunch, and Henry Kaiser, he took me up in front of a blank space, and he handed me a bottle of champagne, and he said, "Go ahead and christen the ship." I said, "Where's the ship?" He said, "Start swinging." During lunchtime, they put on some exhibition air races for all the employees. And as an extra added attraction, they had Lana Turner and Rita Hayworth at the finish line. The first time in the history of aviation that the pilots ever come in ahead of the plane. They invited us up for a ride, one of those new dive bombers. The pilot must have been an Indian, because said he never saw so many pale faces. And during the trip, we hit an air pocket. And the official in the back of me yelled, "Don't mind the jerk, folks." Fine thing, I wasn't bothering anybody. But those planes are really terrific. Remember that song, "The Isle of Capri"? I wrote a sequel dedicated to Japan after these planes fly over it, called "The Pile of Debris." And incidentally, these planes are bought, ladies and gentlemen, by your pennies and your dimes and dollars over here. So as a final Christmas hint, I'd like to say to all you kids, buy war stamps. To you fathers and mothers, buy as much as you can. And to you young fellas, if you're fond of a blonde, buy her a bun and watch her respond. Good night. I think you're grand. So long.
Bravo, bravo. This is certainly a swell show.
You like it, eh?
Oh, you bet. Wait till I tell the folks back home.
You a visitor here?
Yeah, but I'm going home for Christmas.
Oh, you are you? Well, do you realize you're being very unpatriotic?
Who, me?
Do you realize this coming Christmas, the railroads are going to have to carry the heaviest loads in their history? War materials, war workers, urgently needed everywhere. Food supplies for our armed forces.
Well, I don't plan to travel by train.
Well, by bus, then, or plane. A lot of soldiers will be going home to see their folks for the first time in months. Some of them to bid their folks goodbye before going overseas. Do you want to deprive one of those boys of the means of getting home?
No, of course not. But I'm going home for Christmas.
Oh, what can I say to make you see the seriousness of this situation? A war doesn't stop for Christmas. So supplies and men to win it have to keep moving. That's vital. And civilian travel for pleasure is not. In times like these, it's a definite sabotage of the war effort. Don't you see?
Huh? Sure, but I'm going home for Christmas.
So when your country asks you to make this small sacrifice, you won't do it.
But I would...
You'll risk denying some soldier the chance to see his family before going away to fight.
No, but I'm...
You'll risk holding up essential war material for your own selfish pleasure so that you can go home for Christmas.
Gee whiz, I've been trying to tell you. I only live over in Brooklyn.
Well, that is different. But the rest of you, your country asks you earnestly to forego Christmas travel. Military travel alone averages 1,200,000 passengers a month. And in addition to that, mountains of freight must be kept moving constantly to keep our war industries going. The railroads are doing a magnificent job. Don't complicate it with travel for pleasure. For your conscience, for your comfort, and your country, don't travel at Christmas unless you have to. And while we're speaking of Christmas, those of you who haven't already mailed your Christmas packages, do so immediately if you want them to reach their destinations in time.
The tremendous success of Pass the Ammunition seems to have started a trend. More and more of our new songs over here are set in battle tempo and keyed to the purpose of the great world offensive now at last in motion. This is just about the latest. There's an FDR in freedom.
Oh, out in the USA. We can thank every sun for an empty us to preserve our American way. So let's all salute all glory.
Let's all salute all glory.
Splendor and high and
power.
There's
an MCR in freedom.
And she'll bring freedom to the whole wide world.
To the news department now. And a rapid summary of events at home this week. Your over-here commentator, John W. Vandercook.
Perhaps the chief event of the past week has been the realization over here at last that there is no royal road to victory. Sensibly, in our heads, we have always suspected that anything as supremely worthwhile as the winning of this war, like anything else worthwhile, could not be achieved easily or cheaply. But now we are more sure of it, and that realization of the difficulties which may lie ahead merely fits all of us better for the job we have to do. On the fighting front during this last week, there have been no really serious setbacks. Far from it. We have seen, though, that the mere fact that the huge power of the United Nations has wheeled round to the offensive is not in itself enough. Defense, too. Even when we throw our might against it, can be tough and strong. The President has described that armada which won Morocco and Algeria back into the United Nations camp as the greatest single overseas expeditionary force in history. Yet after five weeks of fighting, the key corner of Tunisia and the naval base of Bizerte, Russia, are still firmly in the enemy's possession. And the Axis shows no inclination to let go. The greatest drive of all the Soviet offensive, which sent the Hun invaders reeling back across the snowy plains of Russia, has not halted. But the Germans, with their stolen world loot, now have recovered a firmer footing, and the pace slows down. Though, just tonight, Moscow reports her achievements during the past month before Stalingrad as 94,000 Nazis killed, 72,000 captured, 3,500 German tanks and 737 planes put out of action, with equipment taken. On gallant Guadalcanal, you out there have killed the Japs at the rate of 10-1. The Secretary of the Navy believes that all that remains now is to mop up. Yet that bloody task of mopping may take a long, long time. 1 million American fighting men, Commander-in-Chief reports, have now crossed blue salt water to battle stations overseas. The American civilian effort behind that achievement, quite literally, and without boasting, for it still hasn't been enough, represents the most gigantic organizing and productive effort in the history of the world. Beyond our own needs, we are now contributing through lease lend to the common need of those who fight beside, of those without whose help we might quickly be destroyed. Materials, the value of $10 billion a year, guns and tanks and medicine for Russia, new raw stuff for Britain's never silent factories of war, and enough food from our tremendous stores to keep the bodies of the brave alive. In spite of that booming energy, the economic enemy, inflation, has been kept amazingly in check. Thanks to the obstinate hard work of thousands of devoted men, average American prices have been held down to only a 2-point rise. For the home price rise which took place, that is good going. And the thunder of such achievement, the time does sound fainter, though it is there. Those who willfully will not understand do still hoard their little secret stores of profit. And A few mutterers do mumble about small civilian restrictions. Ice cream isn't quite so plentiful. So that servicemen and vacationers are begged this year, as we've heard, not to use precious rubber tires. You'll see how we respect. But by and large, now that we know the road, we owe it to the stronger pace.
I suppose what about here at home is this. We're smarter. We're thinking about the causes of war and about how those causes can be removed in the world we hope to make after this. And in all our thinking here looms large. A bit. We hear now a new song of hope under that hope. The song of that hope. The song set to the familiar music of Dvorak's Largo. The Pringers, the chorus. Our hearts and our lives today to the cause of all free mankind. Grant us victory over the tyrants who would enslave all free men and nations. Grant us faith and understanding to cherish all those who fight for freedom as if they were our brothers. Grant us brotherhood in hope and union, not only for the space of this bitter war, but for the days to come which shall and must unite all the children of Earth. Our Earth is but a small star in the great universe, yet of it we can make, if we choose, a planet unvexed by war, untroubled by hunger or fear, undivided by senseless distinctions of race, color, or theory. Grant us the courage and foreseeing to begin this task today, that our children's children may be proud of the name of man. The spirit of man has awakened, and the soul of man has gone forth. Grant us the wisdom and the vision to comprehend the greatness of man's spirit that suffers and endures so hugely for a goal beyond his own brief span. Grant us honor for our dead who died in the faith. Honor for our living who work and strive for the faith. Redemption and security for all captive lands and peoples. Grant us patience with the deluded and pity for the betrayed. And grant us the skill and the valor that shall cleanse the world of oppression and the old base doctrine that the strong must eat the weak because they are strong. Yet most of all, grant us brotherhood,
not only for this day, but for all our years. A brotherhood not of words, but of acts and deeds. We are all of us children of Earth. Grant us that simple knowledge. If our brothers are oppressed, then we are oppressed. If they hunger, we hunger. If their freedom is taken away, our freedom is not secure. Grant us a common faith that man shall know bread and peace, that he shall know justice and righteousness, freedom and security, not only in our own land, but throughout the world. And in that faith, let us march toward the clean world our hands shall make.
To achieve a sane, clean, free new world, the American fighting man stands ready today to offer life itself as a sacrifice. If we here at home fail to understand that simple mortal fact, we do not deserve to share in the fruits of military victory. We deserve no brave new world. If we do fully understand that fact, any slight sacrifice we are called upon to make will seem slight indeed by comparison. Yesterday, the valiant cruiser San Francisco returned to her home port. We read of the bravery of her commanders and her crew, and our hearts were uplifted. But shouldn't each of us ask himself, am I worthy of Admiral Callahan, of Captain Young, and of the mortal sacrifice they with their men offered on the altar of freedom? Yes, a world worth praying for is a world worth paying for as well. Think of the payment the men of the... Think of the payment the men of the San Francisco made between dusk and dawn just a month ago. And do your own 10% of your income in war bonds. That's one measure of your worthiness. Every dollar you invest in bonds and stamps, you're investing in your own defenders, in the task you expect them to do, in the new world their victory can bring. Back them up with at least 10% of everything you earn every payday, and try to top that 10% by New Year's. Shortwave and distributed by Bomber Ferry for the entertainment of our troops overseas. Listen at home next week. Listen with your men in the service. Over Here is written in New York by George Faulkner, with bond messages by Thelma Ritter and Joseph Moran, and in Hollywood by Carol Carroll. West Coast production is by Don Bernard. William B. Murray is executive coordinator with the cooperation of the Office of War Information and the Hollywood Victory Committee. The entire production is under the personal direction of William A. Bates. This is James Wallington speaking. Over Here is written in Hollywood and New York City.
This is the Blue Network.